Why don't you start by telling me about the assembly?
Oh,
yeah. And they asked you to go work there.
Oh, I went to school, went back to school in September of 1943. I was already depressed. And
depressed because of the
situation? Because the war had been going on and on, and I knew I was going to graduate in 1944, June of 1944, and I was thinking about what I was going to do after the war. And I was really kind of thinking about joining the service, and I was thinking about what branches to go into. And but that's where my mind was at. And I think probably the end of September, the first part of October, they had an assembly, and the school had an assembly, and announced that we could go to work at the school because the boys shops were being converted to a factory, that it was an experimental project, and that Douglas and Avion in conjunction were going to hire people at Garfield High School and they were going to train us, and we were going to be a part of the war effort, work in a defense plant, you know. And so where else could we get all this? Our education, our training to work opportunity to do something for the war effort and still graduate, you know, and make money along the way. And the money was better than anything they could offer us anywhere else. And it was 90 cents an hour. And so, after the assembly, the assembly, I think, was in the morning, and I think I waited till school was over, my last class. And then I went to see the girls' vice principal. And she couldn't tell me too much more than they had already told us at the assembly. And I just made a snap decision, and I made out my application. And next day I was hired. And she called me in to tell me that I was hired. And so then, during the lunch hour, I told my girlfriends, as I told you, it was an all-girls school. There were five of us who had lunch together every day, that I would not be having lunch with them anymore because I was going to work at Avion. Now, they had gone to the assembly, too, but they had not done anything about it or joined up. And immediately, they all, that's a great idea. They're going to do it, too. And I said, don't, please, because I really didn't want them there. As I told you, I was afraid that maybe it was not a very smart thing to do. I didn't know whether I was doing the right thing or not. And I didn't want them to blame me if they didn't like it. After all, our whole schedule was going to be turned. You know, I had already found out that I would have to drop all of my classes and just take the basics in order to graduate. And I told them that. I said, you're going to have to drop all your classes. It's going to turn your whole life around. And don't do it. But of course, they did. They wanted the money too, and to patriotism, because we had been talking about joining up. We were going to join the service, and we had been talking about what branch of the service. And I think that we were of all of one mind. What are we going to do when we graduate? So, either it was going to be a defense plant or the service for us. Certainly it wasn't going to be marriage. We're no man. You know. We only had two choices. And by then, when I was leaning towards the services, I really was. And so it turned out that I was happy they went to work for Avion because they were friends, and we ended up everything was walk. We got up at the crack of dawn and took a bus to got off at Atlantic and Whittier. I don't know if you know where that is.
Mm-hmm.
And walked all the way up to Garfield. I don't know how many miles that is. But we had to be, we had to punch a time clock and start work at 7:30, which meant that we had to get there, say, around 7 o'clock in order to put our school books away. They had a little bungalow for us and our school clothes, mm-hmm. our skirts, because we used to take the top half was a schoolgirl, you know. The bottom half was our pants, the boots. And the rest was the school gear, you know. So we'd go and put that in the bungalow with our books, and then run over as fast as we could. Bundle up we were already bundled up with our hair, and punch the time clock and go to work. And noise, like you would not believe, because it was nothing but rivet guns. Everybody was trained at the same time, you know.
On the job, or was it special?
Oh, sure. We all went in there like babies. We didn't know anything. And it was, at first, they gave us just a very short training period because they were in a great big hurry to get to these doors. And it wasn't too long after they gave us our training, they set up the assembly lines. And we even had to make the hinges that went on the doors. They were assembled there. The parts all came in, and they even had to be filed to size. You know, they had to be perfect. So it was really a lot. There was a lot more to it than we imagined. And fortunate for me, I think, because I had been a good student. My grades were good, and I had been active in school, politics, you might say. They asked me if I wanted to be an inspector just about a month after I started working. Up until then, I worked awfully hard, riveting and doing everything that the assembly line worker would do. You know, and we were not doing too good a job because we were all novices. And for some reason or other, they asked me to be an inspector, and I jumped at it. I then was trained to be an inspector, which was just making sure that the job was done right. And if it wasn't done right, it had to be redone. And at first, an awful lot of work had to be redone because it wasn't. I think it needed more inspection. So, it wasn't too long, another one of my girlfriends was asked to be an inspector. So, I had a friend. And,
was that a change in pay?
No, but I no longer had to wear that awful clothing. And,
You mean you could wear your skirt?
No. I didn't have to wear that uniform. It was a jumpsuit is what it was, a denim, real heavy type of jumpsuit, like a mechanic. Mm-hmm. And I no longer had to wear the boots. So I could wear capris, pants, you know, slacks. And I would look cleaner. So.
Had you worn pants before you went to work there?
Well, being a Baptist, you know, I told you, they were frowned upon. Because they were not ladylike for me. I didn't very, very much. But with my mother working in a factory, she was beginning to lean towards the pants even though she fought it too. You know, they were just not ladylike. But by the time 43 came around, we were already beginning to, you know, just give in to practicality. And so we were getting sloppy. Who cared? Nobody around anywhere. We no longer dressed up on Sundays. We were wearing the pants on Sundays. I gave up church, you know, completely. And I was beginning to lose my faith in God, even, because the war was lasting so long. I'm sorry to say that. But anyway, as far as the, I was glad that they asked me to be an inspector, because I didn't have to wear the heavy garb, as I put it. And of course, Connie is one of the girls that I know still, was asked to be an inspector, and so she was happy to get out of that, too. It was easier for us. And then they asked me to be final inspector. And then I got out of the assembly line completely. I no longer had to wander. You don't know the noise. I mean, 4 hours of that, you could go deaf. I bet a lot of them did. And it brought me up forward. And I worked with the adults. You know, here are the assembly lines, you know. Now, over here, they're assembling the parts, the little parts, mm-hmm. the hinges and the things. Yeah. Over here, they're assembling the doors. This is the right-hand door. This is the left-hand door, say. Two assembly lines. And over here was final inspection. See? Mm-hmm. I still remember that. And here were jigs. The left-hand, say the right. Oh, no, I'll say the... What's that? That's your left.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this would be the left-hand door, you know, and this would be the right-hand mm-hmm. door, and they were jigs. The completed door was completed at the head of the line mm-hmm. here. It had to be perfect. It had to fit the jig mm-hmm. perfectly, even to the contour. When we stopped to think that it had to go on an airplane that was contoured, mm-hmm. right? And the hinges had to be perfect because they were going to be hinged onto yes. that Bombay door. Well, my doors were finished here, and they were stacked up against the wall here. For me, here I was mm-hmm. in final inspection, they called it. And I went over and I picked up whichever door it was, put each and every door on whatever jig I was supposed to put it on, inspected a portion of it, first the contour mm-hmm. and the general outside of it. And then they had holes in each door, and I had to take a mirror and look inside, like a dentist mm-hmm. does, you know. And as I say, at first everything was hodgepodge because we were slow. Learning and speed and accuracy counts in anything we do, and so they really pushed everybody. That's when you find out how hard it can be. And once everybody realized it was serious business, that we were not being paid for, I don't know what we thought, really, that this was really going to be hard work. So help me, they just got better and better, and they just knocked those stars out like nobody's business. And I hardly had a look at him. But anyway, I was, I bought him. I had a tag mm-hmm. that I filled out with my name and whatever. I don't remember what I put on it. And I attached it to one of the hinges. And then Douglas Aircraft had a buyer. They called final inspection there too. A man, an older man. And he bought it from Avion, you know, mm-hmm. from me. And then the Air Force. Is that the Air Force? I was Avion, Douglas Air Force. Air Force then bought it for the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And that was an older man. And that's all they did. Now, they worked 8 hours. They were there morning and night, you know. So I bought in the morning. And we started at 7:30. And I guess 11:30, 7:30, 8:30, 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, 4 hours. We punched out, went to the bungalow, turned into schoolgirls. You know, we put on our skirts, combed our hair. And we had to take the stuff home with us. The pants we had to take home with us. because I used to like to go to work dressed, you know. So there's a lot of carrying of clothes. But then we had to go to school. So we had a lunch in the cafeteria, and we became a little bit, you know, stolen, you know, kind of tired. You know, we'd worked for 4 hours, and here we were beginning to look down on the other kids, oh, those frivolous, you know, what do they know? We were so grown up and so into this war, and they were not.
I was
going to
ask you what the relationship was with the other students.
We grew so far apart, and so I was proud. Yeah, we were doing our, you know, our thing for the war effort, and they were not. But they didn't see it that way. So Mrs. Magruder, I didn't say anything, but she felt that way. I am pretty sure. So she asked me to write an article for the school newspaper and let the campus know what was going on at Avion. And I really didn't need that because I was working very hard, 4 hours a day, and trying to keep up with my civics, mind you, and I still had to take gym. And they gave us an elective because by then it didn't matter. We had nothing else. So I took typing, and I just didn't have time to write an article, but I did it. I wrote the longest article, a very patriotic article, no, really, a very serious thing. I wrote all about Avion, and it was a long article, and they put it on their front page, and never heard another word about it. It was a good article, too.
You don't happen to have it.
I wish I did, because it was just long. Vicky, my champion, says, well, at least they gave you a byline. And yet, there was still that air of, you know, she impressed upon me that I must say what we were building. I mean, that they were Bombay doors or how many. There was this air of secrecy. After all, we had a guard there, you know, the guard any secrets from leaking out of Avion, and just a general idea of what we were doing because they were curious. So I told them exactly what we did, all about the training that we received and the size of the gun, of the equipment, and I think I tried to build it up and make it sound real big and real important. Nobody cared. Nobody mentioned the article. It didn't matter. So lots of them went on to college or whatever happened. I still see one girl, the one who, everyone has a life to lead. And one girl that I went all the way through school with, married, had 2 children, became a widow almost all at once. And went to work for the Southern California Gas Company. And now she's way up there. She's an executive. And she's the one who organized the homecoming, the reunion that we had in 1974. You see, in 44, that would make it 30 years. And so that was very interesting because, you know, the fellas, you know, that we went to school with and lived through the war, all went to the reunion, and some of them even cried because it brought back a lot of the memories. And so really, in a way, we all changed from giddy young girls, and all our dreams went out the window, and we became motherly, going back to that age. We didn't respect very much of the fellows that came home. They were so out of it. And they were the ones that wanted to go to college. Have you heard this? Did you ever hear anything like that? Do you know that the ones who came back, the fellows who came back, if they, most of them were intelligent young men. If they didn't go to drink or drugs or whatever it was, or completely wasted their lives. The ones who were ambitious went on to college with, under the GI benefits. And a lot of them got married and had their wives help them through college. But I wouldn't do it. My husband wanted that. He was the close. He. When I met my husband, I was the war was over, and after we left Avion in August of 1944, I worked all the way through summer, and we finished the war contract, our contract, and then they were going to start again in September with a new group because we were out of school. So I stayed home for about 3 weeks, wondering what to do. And I just had a hunch that we were going to win the war. Remember, we were getting really close to 45, and things were looking much better. And I just knew, I just had a hunch. And I thought, I don't want to work in a factory. I've had enough of that. I'll take less money. I'll take what little typing I have. Try to get an office job. And they were so they couldn't find anybody that would work for peanuts. So I looked in the local paper, like our Valley Daily News that we have here, and you probably have one in Long Beach, in the ads, and I started answering ads for clerical work. And I gave Avion as a reference, and the fact that I had been a final inspector and I had responsibility and little book work to do and references. And I think my second interview, my goodness, I didn't even have to give them any references. I walked in. They took I walked. Suit, you know, I wore a suit. I looked very businesslike. I think I typed about 35 words a minute. And they hired anybody who walked in there. I walked in with about two girls, and I guess we were all answering the one ad that they had for order desk, it was. And they hired all of us. And
I was going to ask you what
there was a terrific labor shortage, you see, and the people that I went to work for were manufacturing electric motors, and although they had war contracts, they were not a defense plant, and so nobody wanted to work for them because they didn't pay very well, and no benefits, no anything. So things got so bad for them as far as trying to get people to come to work for them that the personnel manager would stand outside the front door and hail people. So, you can imagine what that did to my ego. I got to thinking about a year of that, and I thought, oh my golly, you know, when the war was finally over, I got to thinking, they're going to replace me because there's going to be an awful lot of sharp secretaries coming around looking for work. I knew that the defense plans would vanish as we knew them. And sure enough, boy, it was all I could do to hang on to my job. And all I was a PBX operator, and they trained me for that, and receptionist, mail, you know, light typing. And so I went to work for them, and when did I, 44, September of 44. And in the war was over the following year, you know. And in about 6 months, I was fighting tooth and nail to hang on to my job. Because the girls would come in, women, I mean, these were women who had been working in the, in the offices of the big defense plants. And I was just sure that anybody was going to replace me. But, there were plenty, it was an opening. So they would take anything at first. In no time at all, they got some very sharp, secretaries but I was proud, and I fought for my place, and covered my back. Women. And by the time I met my husband, I was so tired of it all. You know, and I knew that the girl that was working with me was just waiting for me to quit so she could have my job. And as I told you, I was sick and tired of women. You know, I had watched my high school go down to the girls' school, and we were crying so much. And I wanted to be happy, and to me, happiness was getting married to a winner, to a hero, to the conqueror, and he is. He's very nice. And so... my mother, of course, had a lot to do with who I married. And I ended up getting married to my husband. And our marriage, I think, has survived because we didn't know each other all through. We didn't know that we existed. We lived about 5 miles apart in the same neighborhood. And the reason why we even met was because we had mutual friends. And a girlfriend of mine I was bored, you know, Saturday, and there was a fellow that I was interested in. And he was going to be at her birthday party. And so a girlfriend of mine talked me into going, even though I wasn't invited. But I knew her from grammar school. I didn't think she'd mind. And so I went. This was in 1946. So the war was over, a year had gone by, and I was beginning to get reacquainted with young men. The old fellas, there were nothing but old men, you know, and they were, what do you call old men? Lecherous. Oh! Terrible. That's a lot. I don't think I didn't. A lot of unhappiness in men. Trying to pick up young girls and all, but we had no use for them. So we were waiting for our heroes. So anyway, at this girl's birthday party, the fellow that I had gone to see and try to get better acquainted with had a girlfriend with him. And my husband had a date with him. And this girl and I were there all by ourselves. We were the only ones without a date. So I wanted to come home. I think that's one of the things that he liked about me, was that I was not chasing him, you know. You've got a girl, you know, everybody's got a date, I'm leaving, I'm going. And he kept wanting me to stay and asking me to dance, and I had absolutely no interest in him at all. Really, nothing. And he called me at work that Monday. I was not interested. He asked me if he could come over because he found out that I lived right around the corner from his sister, so he knew exactly where I lived. And my goodness, when he came over, he was so handsome. I took a second look, and my sister-in-law was there, and she said, we were all so terrible. she said, where did you find him? And so I said, yeah, that's right, he is handsome, isn't he? And my mother says, oh, isn't he gorgeous? That's the one. And my golly, it was the one. Yes, I show you this. This is where it all began. From then on, my life became this. Jesus. Can you open that? We were married a year later. Oh, this is at our high school reunion. Mine. And that's him. 5 years ago. He's lost his hair. But that's us in 1947. So you see, we were married a year later. But see how handsome he was?
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't he look the part?
What you were waiting for.
Yes, you know. But that's what happened.
I know.
That's what happened to a lot of us. But I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry I got married and had a family. That's really what happened to me. Now it's grandchildren and grown children. And my husband is 60. So we're getting up with the years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 55 right now. I made that up before I talked to you, so I don't want you to think I made that up for you.
Oh,